God's not dead, he's merely hiding. You can see him in the morning when the sun is rising. Greed's not good and God's not dead. I don't care what Nietzsche or Ayn Rand said. The blood of every man is red, and I'm not going to war. They justify all the things they do with convoluted logic and waves still pound upon the sand and will when they're gone. God's not dead, he's merely hiding. You can see him in the morning when the sun is rising. You can build a paradise or wall yourself into a tomb or kick against the hole.
Alrighty, well, each week at this time we like to welcome Les Visible to do an audio commentary. He's quite well known across the world through various blogs in which he writes his commentaries, but he's like a musician, the singing, talking poet. There's a passion in when he speaks. And we enjoy when he speaks his piece. And so he comes from across the pond, somewhere in Europa, in the mothership, as he says, to bring this week's commentaries, socio-political, metaphysical, from Les Visible.
Aru, the dog poet, sends a howl across the resonating ethers to the worlds among the stars beyond our reach. We're in the saucer pod this evening and hiding in a cloud of unknowing as agents of the reptile overlords probe the mist for our presence. Good luck, zombie bots. Even if you do see us, it will only be a projection intentionally manifested to draw you in another direction. We can send out multiple phantom images all night long, but we only need 15 minutes. Some people are looking for 15 minutes of fame. Some people are looking for 15 minutes of audio, and that's our job here in the saucer pod. Linked up to the mothership and sitting on the dark side of the moon while relaying the telepathic feed from Sirius Cluster down into the mind of Visible. Welcome and good evening to you. I want to talk about something we were recently discussing over at Visible Origami, and that is the heaviness that has been in the atmosphere for some time now. I brought it up to see if the readers were experiencing similar things, and the response was pretty clear. Yes, according to most respondents. I suspect it differs in degree and we handle it differently, but it's there. I can feel it. Something seems to have gone missing, and I've been at pains to define what that is. It seems to be more than any single feature. There's the weight, of course, and there's the lassitude when it comes to spiritual practice. There's a sense of inertia. I try to tell myself that I will do such and such a thing and then find myself going sideways around my original intention and losing myself in something else. My mind is clear and my heart is open, but there's a sensation that all is not as it should be and that something's missing. What flows through my heart is not flowing the way it often did in the past. I have to jumpstart the pump. I have to visualize what used to come on its own. I have to dig deeper into something, whatever it is, that is below the last something that I was digging in. It had occurred to me, and I mentioned it in the blog entry, that spiritual contemplation, practices, and progress are all being retarded, and that makes them more important than they were at other times. It is precisely when we are beset with heaviness and a dilute will that we have to summon the strength to put ourselves where we need to be. I used to be able to meditate with little difficulty, and then, by degrees, I didn't even want to meditate anymore. The one place that I'm still able to engage in these things is when I'm lying in bed. At night, I'm able to focus and go through processes in my mind for an hour or two before I fall asleep. In the morning, I often wake up with a sense of love and well-being, which I pour out in the direction of my Creator, whatever direction I imagine that is, and then all is well. Once I've gotten up, though, there's some kind of reverse polarity at work. It's like playing with magnets. Then there's the weariness, and I've been thinking that this is somehow tied into the passing of the age. As the age is passing, it's pulling down on all the parts of us that have a connection to it. My job is to release these things, no matter what they are, but that's easier said than done. In some cases, it might be that they're holding on to me, and I have to pry their little fingers from my being so that the wake of the passing age will drag them into its slipstream. I'm thinking that we are presently at a point where the drag of the passing age is as great or nearly equal to the pull of the arriving age, and that is what accounts for what many of us are feeling. We have to put forth the effort to aspire, but it's like trying to stay awake in chemistry class when you're not into chemistry in the first place, and maybe you stayed out late the night before. Also, it's near the end of the day, and the room is hot, and the teacher is boring in that way that many academics have raised to an art form. They've lost interest in the subject themselves, so they're mailing it in instead of challenging the interest and imagination of their students. I'm very grateful for the green Tara chant that I'm carrying around with me these days. It's very much like a vibrationary vehicle that is motoring me through the heavy magnetism of the pulling departing age. The chant is like a sound current that I can ride through the difficulty of these times, and things have been happening that I can only attribute to this practice. I'm not recommending that you start chanting yourself. Different things work for different people. Some people prefer prayer or focusing on symbols. Yantras and mandalas are the personality and presence of God. Some like a combination, and that's what I'm doing. I'm chanting while practicing the presence, informing myself that the presence is within and all around me, and I'm reaching within with my mental and emotional bodies toward union with this one. There's an interesting phenomena which I'd like to put out here, and that is that mental practice without emotional support can only accomplish so much unless you're a master of the art, and there are some of those. You've heard the concept that you should do whatever you do with your whole being. I'm suggesting that if you drive, reach, or however you see it, with your mind, your emotions, and your body, then you're bringing your whole being to the table. So I yearn from all of these places when I'm laying in bed. I suspect that the success of these efforts may not show up at the time they are being performed, but could well show up at another time, like some package traveling to you from a post office truck or in the cargo hold of an airplane. Sooner or later, it's going to be in your postman's bag, and sooner or later, he will leave it on your doorstep or ring your bell and ask you to sign for it. The truth of the matter is that only a few of us wanted that badly, but maybe you're one of them. I'm not going to criticize people who go to church on Sunday and think they've done what they have to do as far as God is concerned. Some of them even go on Wednesday nights, too, and some of them are more engaged than that. I would compare success at discovering and possessing the presence of God to learning to play the piano or the guitar. You can practice for an hour a week, you can practice every day for an hour, and you can practice so your fingers ache and bleed. At the end of the year, some of you are going to be much further along the road to being accomplished than those who applied themselves with a lesser intensity. The way I understand it, if you want to possess the presence of God, you should be practicing it all the time. Now, God's not like anyone else. You might get someone else to come around without extending too much effort, but God is another matter altogether, and he also knows better than you ever will the exact state of your conviction, passion, sincerity, and determination. It really does come down to how bad do you want it. How bad do you want it? How bad do you want it? Not bad enough. Yeah. This same thing applies to winning somebody's heart. God is like that passion of romance, and he responds in kind. God is attracted to love. Like attracts like, and God is love. God is love, the very soul of love, the cosmic attractor, the ultimate dissolving agent, and so very, very much more. If people had any idea of just what God is capable of, they would put all their attention on finding him, her, as you prefer. And like the book says, all these things, these other things, will be added unto you in spades. Little do we know how little we know. I had a challenge thrown at me today or yesterday, as it applies to you listening to it now. This ties in with a service that is demanded of us. Many people go through their life and do not see the opportunities for service all around them because they are primarily interested in self-service. I went to the food store today and my dog Poncho came along because that's his main thing, driving in the car and going berserk when we passed livestock or dogs on the street. We were coming back near the Olive Cooperativo, Olivia, a cooperativo, when I spotted this bedraggled puppy moving through some high grass with great difficulty. He made it over to the sidewalk. I'd slowed down to check him out. The sidewalk is raised up on a ridge, and he was trying to pull himself up, but he just couldn't make it. Poncho's going berserk, which he likes to do. I left him in the car and took out a package of hamburger that I bought to fix Poncho's rice and burger lunch with, and fed the little guy, who was, as might be expected, starving. It had been raining on and off for several days, and his hair was matted and full of hitchhikers and debris. I thought about what it would cost me to take this dog home. The dog appeared to be not much more than 2 months old. I don't know where its mother or siblings were. Maybe he was driven off. I couldn't guess. What I did know was that his path had intersected and bisected with mine. I could have driven by or left him after I fed him, but he wouldn't have lasted long. He has no survival skills, and the usual Italians down here are fast and unruly drivers. This dog wouldn't mean much to most of them. I didn't actually have a choice. Well, there was one clear choice. And a lot of rationalizations that can be applied to most any similar situation featuring humans or animals. We pass these things by every day. So I opened the back door of my VW Golf, and Poncho jumped out and loomed over the puppy, and then he jumped him. The puppy went off screaming and terrified, and I kicked Poncho away, not viciously, but to get his attention, and threw my car keys at him, which led to my having to go into the car to get them. He didn't injure the puppy, but he could have. He got quite the lecture on the way home, which probably sounded like, "Poncho, babble, 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 Poncho, babble, 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 bad dog," which I think he knows, and more babble, babble, babble. I brought the dog home and made lunch for the two of these guys, and then I put the puppy in the tub and washed him. He was very dirty, and it took some time removing the hitchhikers, some of which still remain. I toweled him off, and he's nearly dry now. Monday, I have to take him to the vet, and I will have to get him looked at and attended to. I'll have to get him his shots and his doggy passport. I'll have to house train him and feed him and probably take him back up the road with me when I go so that Suzanne can find him a home. Every dog we've rescued has cost several $100s, just in vet fees and treatments. Collars, I don't know. It adds up. More importantly, it's in my space and it requires time and attention. The mind is the devil, so the mind wants to let me know what a good guy I am, so I have to push that out of my head because it's my duty. It has nothing to do with my being a good guy, except if I wasn't doing my duty, which would qualify me as weak and lacking certain critical qualities, and maybe even define me as a bad guy. God does this for all of us every day and receives scat thanks across the board. God does much more than this for us and receives scant acknowledgement or gratitude in general. So I came up against all the reasons and rationales in my head for not doing this before I did this, but I have to live with myself, and I know what the right thing is, as do we all. You can raise all the fine arguments you like, but the bottom line is the bottom line, and I'm not going to get near the presence of God unless I perform those actions that attract the presence of God. Many people don't care about this for some reason. A lot of them perform religious duties because of conditioning or social imperatives. Some do it for political reasons, and some do it for their children, but most people do it, well, they don't do it because they really want to come into the presence. They've got some other reason. They don't want to come in with all the speed that's possible, and that can be achieved without ever going into a church or exchanging two words with a priest or a minister. The dog story could have been about anything. It just so happens that it happened, and it involved a dog, and I was going to be writing this anyway this evening, but every single day gives me a story about something that applies to this. Every single day is a teaching period and a series of possibilities that weigh the quality of my heart and measure my ability to see what is in front of me, and so on and so forth. It could be that in these times of heaviness, the best thing we can do is to be of use to other life forms. Service is one of the most powerful acts we can perform, and cave de vedette, as the medieval statement goes, God is watching, and he uses our eyes to do it, and he uses our minds and our hearts and our hands to accomplish his work. If we are not accomplishing his work, then we are working for the other guy. There's no middle ground. The other guy is God too, but not the side of him that interests me. Some people are working for the other guy consciously, but most people do it unconsciously and often think they are serving the other side when they are not. My stomach turns over every time I hear about some multimillionaire or billionaire donating, in a very public way, some pittance towards some organization that will spend the money on salaries and the movement of paper. So-and-so gave $1 million to so-and-so, and it got trumpeted across the news. So-and-so has $3 billion. So whoop-de-doo. Before he became the world's biggest philanthropist, Bill Gates was the world's biggest tightwad. He would go around and give out $5,000 donations for playgrounds and such, and sometimes his company gave away computers, which didn't cost him anything, and he got it returned on the back end. Anyway, the press started to get on his ass about how cheap he was. He said, "I intend to give it all away when I die." That didn't wash, and so he and Melinda sorta, kinda, had to make an adjustment in their way of doing things. So now they have the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and they can march around like they are making the world a better place. There's a few billion in that charity. Bill's still got about 50 billion left. God's not impressed. Every time Bill Gates comes up, God changes the channel. Bill owns half of MSNBC.com, and MSNBC.com is a manufactured news-in and garbage-out operation that's right in line with the rest of the media that supports the horror abroad that America has become. He could insist that they tell the truth, but Bill works for the other guy I was talking about. Doesn't matter what the appearance of your staged good works may be. Sincere and selfless giving is different than self-congratulating publicity stunts, and the divine sees what's in your heart and what your motivations are. We're all at a different point on the grand journey back to our illuminated home. Our degree of faith and commitment differ. If we don't have as much as we need to get it. And it is something you can ask for. You can ask God for a loan from his cosmic bank. Lots of people ask God for an improvement in their material circumstances, but fewer people ask for changes in their being, which would make even lesser material states confer much more in value than even the very super rich possess. I don't feel like being dogged by my conscience, so I try to do what it tells me to do. I don't like feeling bad, so I do what makes me feel good. I try to make my secret life something the invisible higher-ups will improve of, because I want to hang out with them, not with the movers and shakers of this world. God, the creative and controlling essence and consciousness in life, is very real. How real that is up to us. It's the amount of faith and belief that we put into something that is responsible for how much substance it has. Reminds me of that great line from one of these scriptures. Faith is the substance of things unseen. It's what it's made out of. So, get more faith. Well, my friends, here on planet Terra, Tara, and those of you in other dimensions and at a far remove, it is time to once again bring an end to the broadcast. I'll see you next Sunday, if there is one. It's an Avita Chorin sort of a thing. Until we're together again, may you walk in the light and be guided by the light until you are filled with the light. Aloha and aloha.
And my sun is rising. God's not dead, merely hiding. You can see him in the morning when the sun is rising.